When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
To listen without ads, head over to patreon.com/rightandwrong.
Ooh, a spicy question. I
because
love
the writing is sort of everything, right? Like you kind of can fix plot holes, but if the writing
So some readers love that and some readers are like, but I wanted more of this. So it's kind of a gamble.
Hello and welcome back to the Right and Wrong podcast. On today's episode, I'm joined by someone who has worked with a number of big organizations, including McSweeney's, The Believer, Noon, and Tor, to name a few. But now she is a published author with her debut, Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind, coming out last year in the US. And as of this airing, it will be out in the UK. It's Molly McGee. Hello, welcome.
Hello.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, an honor, a pleasure, a gift. I'm happy to be here.
Lots to cover. Let's start with the book, Jonathan Abernathy, You Are Kind. Tell us a little bit about it.
You know what? It's really fucking weird.
Wow. It's the best picture I've heard.
That's how I'm going to start off. About a guy who he's got a lot of debt. He finds himself trapped, which I think is a little relatable right now. Like a bunch of people feel this way. Yeah. And he gets the strangest invitation to sort of join a dream auditing. Or, well, he doesn't know that at the time, but he gets the strangest invitation to join like this workforce. And once he's there, he realizes he has to go into the dreams of other people and remove the things that make them anxious or depressed. And of course, that ends up going horribly wrong.
I feel like that could be the concluding line to any pitch to any story. And of course, yes. Everything goes wrong.
Everything goes wrong. But you know what? There's some laughter around along the way. But there's also some tears.
Yeah. Much like life.
Much like life.
It's such an interesting premise. And like you said, it's one of those things that is sort of oddly relatable. Like I feel like it is quite on the zeitgeist at the moment. It's one of the things that makes you ask questions that really only kind of speculative near future fiction can. Where did this concept like come from? What was it that you kind of were like, this is an interesting thing and I want to explore it?
You know, this is where I'm gonna sound a little American. This concept came to me through a series of anxiety dreams, nightmares. And I was having these nightmares. I was perhaps in some financial straits. And I was having these nightmares on a nightly basis. And the only way that I could get them to stop was sort of to write it down. So I do think there may be some subconscious things going on around my relationship with money. But to me, I mean, that sort of, I don't know, that anxiety around money and living has just always been such a prevalent theme in my life that has really impacted everybody around me. So when the dreams started happening, I wasn't really surprised to be having them. You know, it was really the fact that writing it down got rid of the dreams that surprised me the most.
Wow. Okay. So it's quite a sort of personal story where the whole concept comes from.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of weird, you know, you can't always control how things come out of you as a writer, you know? I think the myth is that you can choose what type of writer you're going to be. And if I had my druthers, you know, I would be just a very research focused writer. And I do have that element in my craft. Like I read a lot and I especially read a lot of science texts.
Okay.
For me, though, like without the personal, the story can't be universal. So you have to go to a lot of places that are kind of scary to write it. Like some of your darkest places have to be explored to write a book. So I kind of think, hey, you know what? I think a lot of writers are fibbers when they're saying if their books aren't personal. I think they just don't want to talk about it.
And a lot of, with a lot of debut novels as well, it's very clear that it's largely sort of pseudo autobiographical, like that they're retelling something from their actual life.
I don't know if it's pseudo autobiographical for me. Like that, hey, if I went in there, that would be a little crazy. you know, but for me, I think like with anything, when you're writing it, you have to imagine correlations or moments where you felt a certain way or you knew somebody else felt a certain way. And that's when, you know, extensive reading can come in handy. There are definitely some like moments, apexes that happened in other books that I was thinking about when I was writing this book. But I don't know, art is weird. And we always try to classify it or make it sound like it's one thing or another. And the artist is always selling you the art. So I'm an unreliable narrator of how it's made.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. And as a concept, it reminds me a lot of Severance, the television show.
When that show came out, I was like, God damn it.
But you come at it from a very different angle. It's more just like the subject area is kind of parallel.
I haven't seen it because I'm petty.
Okay.
But what I'll say is like, hey, it feels weird to work on something for 3 years and then like a huge show come out about it and be like, well.
I feel like it's an inevitability. I was talking to some of my writer friends just the other day and they were saying, yeah, you start writing something, you look up to see if anyone else has done anything similar. They haven't. As soon as you finish it, you'll see 5 like television series and books that come out that are really similar.
Yes. No, I don't know what it is. I don't think my book is too similar, like tonally and atmospherically. It's very different. And it also is really concerned with sort of different things. Like I would say the show is about entertainment and social commentary. And a lot of people have been talking about my book like it's social commentary, but I think of it more as a place for reflection. Like the book itself is a place to go in and just think really deeply without having any answers sort of forced upon you.
Yeah.
Sometimes like the shows that are like straight up political or have very obvious messaging. I'm not saying Severance is one of those shows because I'm sure it's beautiful and wonderful. And a lot of people who like,
I can tell you it is conceptually very different in that yours is about dreams. Severance is about basically splitting your mind in two. So you have two personalities and one can't remember the other and one does all the work and one gets all the recreation.
Ah, I see.
Yeah. It's more just like the setting of it and like the idea of us as a society optimizing workers.
Yeah. You know, hey, I think any of us can look around and see that we're doing that. So
yeah. Yeah, yeah. We just don't have the technology that like you're exploring to like go kind of dark with it yet. Yet.
Yet.
I'm sure Amazon are working on it.
No, actually, you know what? Did you see they like 6 weeks after my book came out in the US, they announced a startup. There's a startup where you can work through lucid dreaming. Guys, don't do this. I promise it's not going to work the way you want it to.
They read your book and they were like, I've got an idea.
They were like, I have the most brilliant Silicon Valley idea to ever exist. You're like, okay.
That's terrifying. It's you read kind of classic speculative fiction and like you see some of it actually coming to life now and you're like, oh no, it was a warning, guys, it wasn't a how-to.
Yes. What's that tweet that's like, I read the famous book The Terminal Nexus about how terminal nexuses are bad and now I'm starting a company called Terminal Nexus. It's like, okay,
yeah,
I don't know, it's like comic book supervillain shit.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And yeah, it's like the Squid Games, right? The Squid Game show, which is actually a drama about like classism and like the struggle of people in the society. And then they made the real life Squid Games like game show as just a huge like
I'm so boring. I don't watch a lot of TV. I hear about it, you know, and people tell me this stuff and I'm like, what are they going to come up with next? Like, let's see.
Well, they're waiting for you to write your next book so they can use that idea. let's get back onto the book.
Okay.
As we've talked about, it is a sort of innately dark premise. We are looking at the sort of darker side of where humanity can go and things like that. But thought-provokingly so, do you think it's important, because you do have, it is funny, you do have humor in there. Do you think it's important with these kinds of things, these relatable, introspective things, to have that layer of humor?
See, but here's where we get into nitty-gritty craft questions. Mm-hmm. Because my motive for writing might be different than other people's motive for writing. I am really, really interested in sort of the mental spaces that reading can put us into. And I'm especially interested in them from sort of, I don't want to say, let's say a cathartic perspective. So one of my motivations in writing is to, you know, lull the reader into a sense of rhythm and pattern and comfort so that they can think about some of the things that are happening in our society that are almost too stressful or too large to look at head on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so to me, I don't know about you, but I'm a teacher. I'm a professor at Columbia. And one of the things that I think about a lot is like, it's not necessarily whether the material is interesting or not interesting. What really motivates my student to learn something is when they feel safe learning it. And so humor can be a really great way to be like, hey, you know what this is? Like, it's a little, let's just say I put the black in black comedy, you know? but I do think humor is important. I think moving through life and having a sense of humor about it is such a weird experience. So you got to laugh. And it just seems like writing a book void of humor would be a really poor way of sort of like exploring the world, because the world is so funny.
Yeah, even at its darkest times, it's about finding.
I know. I mean, Jamie, we just spent 10 minutes talking about an Apple TV show that came out. You know, like that I've never seen. You know, that's really funny.
yeah, I guess it is.
It is funny, and like, you know, it's funny for me to like spend like 5 years, 6 years on something, and then come out with it and watch all this stuff happen. Like, that's kind of fun, you know?
It's weird,
but you just never know. And so I think humor, for me, humor and horror are very closely related. They're both about timing.
Okay.
And so when you're playing with one, you're playing with the other. It's like when you're lighting a film, you know, you're not just thinking, what spots do I want to have lit? You're thinking, what spots do I want to have in shadow? And then you're choosing how to contrast those elements for maximum effect.
Right. Like use of negative space.
Yes, exactly. And you do that with language too, you know, like really to me, writing a book seems like knowing what shouldn't be there, you know, knowing what needs to be left out.
Those are such wise words as someone who's, you know, writing and written and like knows a lot of people who are writing. And I speak to lots of people who are writers looking to kind of break into the industry. That I think is, I've never heard it phrased from that direction, but like, yeah, knowing what not to put, I think is such an incredible and unsung skill.
It is. It's really hard because it requires a lot of editorial work, you know, like, just a lot of, when I'm doing my process, I write my first draft and then I rewrite it like 7 times. Mm-hmm. And each time I'm going through and I'm removing things or, realizing like, hey, the things that are in here are obfuscating the main patterns of the books, the main thematics of the novel. So, it's really just about like, it's about creating and then it's about calling.
And it's about knowing what to call. It's about knowing mm-hmm. and being confident enough to say, okay, we don't need that bit, as opposed right. to being sort of, if you weren't sure and you cut something and then you realize later on, it's caused a lot of issues.
Yes. I think a lot of writers get into the weeds when they're thinking about how books are supposed to be, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But really the word novel is important, you know, it means new experience. And I think really like there are so many ways a novel can be. Part of the joy of being an artist is to make the novels that you want to see.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And speaking of editorial, and you've worked as an editor, you've worked in editorial. Mm-hmm. Was that something that you did before you were sort of thinking about writing your own novel, or have you always been writing your own novel and you just were doing editorial at the same time as that?
I was always writing, and writing okay. was always my end goal. But I really love editorial work. I find editing so satisfying because I really, really love teaching, and I love, you know what I mean? It's just so, writing is such a lonely process. Mm-hmm. that it feels so wonderful to meet a fellow enthusiast and to really get in their head and see how they see the novel, what they want to bring forward, and then helping them get to the point where they feel confident in doing so. But I think a lot of editorial work is just convincing the writer that they can get away with what they want to get away with and building yeah. supports for them to be ambitious. But it can be tough, you know, I like the process of editing, but I don't know if I like the sort of professionalization of editing.
Okay. I see. Yeah. I see what you
yeah.
mean.
Yeah.
With this novel, when you went to, and you have a literary agent, you're signed with Angeline Rodriguez at WME.
It's true.
When you signed with her, is she very editorial? Did you kind of go back and forwards on this project before you sent it out to editors?
Jamie, this is where I reveal myself to be even more finicky than I've already revealed myself to be. Like, your listeners are listening, they're like, who is this asshole? You know, I am really, really, really intentional and really picky about what goes on the page. And so, no, I don't necessarily think that, like, I'm not really a, how do I want to put it? I could do the line level editing myself. Mm-hmm. What I will say is like the best part of my experience putting this book out was working with Kishani at Fourth Estate. She's just a brilliant editor because she, to me, understands like the core tenets of editing, which is just asking questions. And so she just asked me, I think she only asked me 5 questions, but they were just so perfectly asked that they allowed me to delve into, you know, the puzzle that was writing this book and really think about it from a new angle that was a really enjoyable angle to unlock. So for me, I think everybody prefers to be edited differently, but because my work is so conceptual and so emotionally based in terms of like the choices that I'm making on a linguistic level, I find that questions can be the most helpful.
I completely agree. Because then also, like you said, a lot of an editor's job is to basically convince the author that they can get away with the thing they want to try and do. And
yes.
asking a question is not confrontational.
It's like
what did you think about this? And then you can, it's, you know, like with your book, it's, you're trying to encourage self-reflection, but on the writing as opposed to the person.
Yeah. Even if it was confrontational, you know, I don't think she would ever do this, but you know, if I had an American editor who was like, Molly, what the fuck are you doing on page 68? I'd be like, that is a great question. What am I doing on page 68? So I don't know if the confrontational aspect of editing bothers me very much. I have a history of like, I work pretty well with big personalities. Mm-hmm. And I don't take things super personally, or I try not to, but I can be really stubborn because I know what the book is when I set out to write the book. To me, it feels like I'm translating it. And so I use this really bad metaphor when I'm teaching my undergraduates, which is, have you ever seen the one TV show I've ever watched, House MD?
Yes.
With
the UK's own Hugh Laurie.
Yes, Laurie, thank you. Okay, well, maybe I haven't seen it, but I'm familiar with the concept. And you know how, like, you know how he's got a team of people, mm-hmm. and all they do is they research the subject. They're like, here's what I think is going on. They pitch it to him, and he's just like, he listens, you know? He's like, okay, sure. He doesn't listen very well, but he listens.
No.
And then he goes, you're all wrong. It's not the fever. It's not the cough. It is actually, you know, I broke into her house and it's mold in her bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always something like that.
Yes, it's always something like so extra. And I think of the writer sort of as the house figure. You know, the writer is an addict to telling their story. Only the writer knows how it's going to come out. Only the writer knows what they're fully capable of. Their job, no matter how uncomfortable, is to hear the people around them and figure out if they're describing symptoms or illness. Because if they're describing symptoms, your job is to find that moment where they disconnected from the text. And it's very rarely that, you know, someone who isn't the author, I think, can find the root cause of why things are. We all have our ideas, but art is very mercurial and chaotic. It's a very difficult balance to bring something to life.
Yes. No, that makes so much sense. When you say it as, yeah, you're looking for, you need to know that people are describing symptoms, but you need to find the actual,
yes,
the cause of the symptoms, not you
the
can't
cause.
Just patch all the symptoms because it will keep happening. Yes, that's
exactly
so true.
It's like the author's job is to bring life to the text, and your text isn't going to have a very long life if you publish it and it's exhibiting all these symptoms that people are going to notice. So I don't know if that's a maybe very 21st century way of thinking about it, but
I think it makes a lot of sense. It rings true for me anyway, how I'm thinking about it. I think it also ties back to what we were talking about earlier when we were saying how it's very important for an author to know what not to put. And sometimes mm-hmm. when your editor is asking questions, or people are, you know, people are proofreading it or something like that, and they say something that can actually highlight to you something where it's like, oh, maybe that is a section that that shouldn't be there, that I have. That's mm-hmm. something that I don't want to write.
Mm, yeah, definitely. I think it's all so personal. It's such a weird thing to do. Writing is just really weird. It's all about patterns, you know, and balance. Mm-hmm. I personally am really interested in the holistic, you know, like the full picture. I think sort of we as a society have been plagued by dualism a little too long. So I think that I can mix like high and low, funny and sad, or at least that's my goal, right? To sort of mm-hmm. bring extremes into harmony.
Yeah, I think you're quite right. I think you've hit the nail on the head with that one.
Maybe a little too grief forward with this one.
You got to write what you're feeling and what you know and what you want to share, you know?
And I got to do some really great like research and work and thinking about sort of the state of affairs on conceptual macro mm-hmm. level. It's interesting.
And I think, I feel like you might agree that there's a lot of it for writers, I think, will come down to the writer knowing what their expectations are and what they want to achieve with their writing. You know, whether you want to write something that is just sort of unashamedly you and sort of untouched, or if you want to, that's quite a different goal from writing something that you say, oh, I actually want this to be a commercial success.
Right. Yeah. I don't think I ever was under any illusion there. I've been in the business too long, you know. Mm-hmm. I think every writer has different motivations for writing. And like anyone, whatever they tell you their motivation is, it's probably going to be missing some things. You know, something I've noticed, like I tend to be very uncomfortable in interviews. I'm sure you guys can tell. And so, I tend to like say things that downplay my writing experience or whatever and make light of it. And you know what, Jamie, I do that in every single aspect of my life, and it's a huge problem. But no one will ever, you know, hey, that's what's going to be the thing that's said. People who can get out there and spin a pretty story about how they wrote their story, you know, like how it's like the greatest achievement since the beginning of man, and how this is the next great American novel, you know. Yeah. I feel almost like in awe. I feel proud of them.
Okay.
Good for you.
Well, I wouldn't have noticed that you were being withheld in this interview. And I think you telling us about the dreams that kind of inspired the concept of your novel, there's a great authenticity to that. And I think you can never overlook the power of authenticity.
We're trying, you know. It's so weird because writing is such a private, personal thing, and it's something you do for hours and hours alone, and you enter almost like, I enter a type of flow or fugue state. Mm-hmm. And you make decisions intuitively based off all of your education up to that point. You know, it's like an artist sort of knows that green and purple, you know, go together and create certain effects. So it can be interesting to examine it from the other side with third parties who are charming and lovely and very nice.
Well, I think this, you throughout this interview, have been charming and lovely and very nice. And that does bring us to the final question of the episode, which as always is, Molly, if you were stranded on a desert island with a single book, which book do you hope that it would be?
Okay. See, you asked me this question over email, prepping me a little bit. And I'm going to be totally honest. I thought about lying. I was like, ooh, I could give a really good answer where I sound
a fancy like, one.
Not fancy, but where I sound way cooler than I am. You know? But I decided to be honest. And my answer is really embarrassing. I would bring an encyclopedia.
Okay. No, I like that.
I would bring an encyclopedia set. I have, you know what? Like, I think it counts as one book. I could fit it on an iPad or a phone. Okay. And I would have a great time reading that until the end of the world.
just learning about all of the things, all of the random little bits.
I love learning, and what else will I be doing? If I don't know if that's like the answer you wanted, I could give you a novel, but I would probably feel really dumb if I had one opportunity to bring a book and I was like, I'm going to bring my favorite book. What if my answer was The Third Policeman, Flann O'Brien? I bring that to an island. Like, that seems important.
If you had to take a novel, that's the novel you would take.
I'm not saying it is or it isn't. But I'm saying it would be very very impractical choice.
Yeah, probably.
I would have a great time, but it would be very impractical.
Okay, well, that's great. I mean, we've had, honestly, over 150 plus episodes, we have had all sorts of books and like lots of novels, as you'd expect, but also like lots of unusual books, like the Argos catalog has come up. I've had like dictionaries, had a cooking book, I think. All sorts.
I love that. But if I'm stranded on an island, a dictionary.
Yeah.
I think I could get more work out of like understanding how, you know, screws were made.
I think we've also had the original language Romance of the Three Kingdoms, and the goal was to learn, somehow just infer how to translate that into English.
Oh, I love that. That's a really good answer, actually. No, I would want a whole encyclopedia set, and I would cheat and I would say they're one book, and I would die very happily having spent all of my days reading about the world that I left behind.
You'd be so knowledgeable about completely random things.
And you know what would be the most satisfying part of it, Jamie, is it would just be for me.
Yeah.
No one I would else, just get to you. Know everything that we know to a certain extent, you know, and I would just be on an island and I would get to think about it without the pressure of like responding to it. And that sounds amazing. That sounds like a true opportunity for contemplation.
Yes, ultimate freedom. And on that note, thank you so much, Molly, for coming on the podcast, telling us all about your writing and your book and your kind of wild approach to stories and all of that. It's been really, really fun chatting with you.
Yeah, thank you.
For anyone listening, if you want to keep up with what Molly is doing, you can follow her on Twitter at Molly McGee or on Instagram at McGee Molly, or you can head over to her website, mollymcgee.com. To make sure you don't miss an episode of this podcast, follow along on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. You can support the show on Patreon, and for more bookish chat, check out my other podcast, The Chosen Ones and Other Tropes. Thanks again to Molly, and thanks to everyone listening. We'll catch you on the next episode.